This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Since human beings started cutting down trees, we've cut down more than half of the trees on Earth. That's according to a study published in the journal Nature. Every year, 15 billion trees are cut down and only 4 are planted, leaving an annual deficit of 11 billion trees. Later on the show, we'll talk with the co-founders of a fledgling nonprofit called OneTree.org in Lee County, which has the goal of making up that difference. But first, the 20th Circuit of the State Attorney's Office in Florida covers 5 counties and receives more than 60,000 new cases a year. Even though it's the biggest circuit in the state, it still sees a relatively low crime rate. Still, the number of homicides being prosecuted right now stands right around 50. And now the local state's attorney's office has shifted personnel to boost the number of attorneys on its homicide unit from 5 to 8. Here to tell us more about this specialized group of prosecutors within the 20th Circuit is Chief Assistant State Attorney Amira Fox. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are talking about the increase in the number of state prosecutors in our district whose focus will be homicide. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Amira Fox, what led to the decision to reallocate resources to put more prosecutors on homicide?
So, Julie, we actually had 6 attorneys in our homicide unit. One of them retired. He was a longtime attorney, and we replaced him. So that's one of the new additions. We also added 2 attorneys to the homicide unit. What we determined was that on our general felony dockets in our felony division in Lee County, we have what's called early resolution court. And with the advent of that court, the cases pass through more quickly. It saves the taxpayers a lot of money as we resolve those cases more quickly. And we took the money from those positions and moved them over to use them as homicide positions where we can tackle the most violent crime in our community.
What's early resolution court?
Early resolution court is where we have several attorneys assigned to that in Lee County and some of our other counties. They look at the case from the moment it hits the system and determine whether or not it can enter into that court, which are nonviolent crimes, and with the consent of if there have been any kind of theft from somebody with the consent of the victim, we move that case to the system more quickly to a resolution, and therefore the system moves, you know, it's a much more efficient way of handling cases.
So because of that, it freed up some resources.
It did.
Were these badly needed resources?
I would say yes. I think it's always important when you have a homicide unit, which we do, that it be very well staffed and can really address the cases. We have about 50 open cases, and those attorneys don't handle too many cases each so that they can devote their full time to not only handling the cases but working from the very beginning with law enforcement on the cases and helping it through the system and being involved in the community.
Yeah. And if you had 5 people and you have 50 cases, that would be 10 per person. And if a lot of things are happening with any of those 10 cases at a given time, I think it would be kind of tough.
That's correct. Plus, those are open cases. Another duty a homicide attorney has is they are always on call for law enforcement, so they could at any time be called out to a murder crime scene. They help draft search warrants when it comes to murder crime scenes. And all other cases, actually, we help law enforcement if they need help with drafting search warrants. And they also are very involved from the beginning. They also do what's called case reviews, arrest warrant reviews, which each one of them probably at all times has probably at least 5 of those in addition to their regular caseload of cases actively being prosecuted.
That's a busy job. When we talk about homicide, what exactly are we talking about? Is it all murder, manslaughter, DUI?
Excellent question. It's all of the above. 5 of our attorneys, or actually 6 of our attorneys, will focus on murder, manslaughter, second-degree murder, first-degree murder. When you have a first-degree murder, I didn't mention this before, but you have the whole grand jury presentation that goes into it. The attorney has to prepare for grand jury. The attorney has to prepare for death penalty proceedings if we decide to seek the death penalty. 2 of our homicide attorneys are dedicated to traffic homicide, which means any DUI, manslaughter, vehicular homicide, and possibly some other traffic cases involving death. So 2 of
them carry that docket. Pedestrian versus car, things like that.
Correct.
And we have been getting a lot of information in Lee County that Cape Coral, one of the most dangerous places to be a pedestrian. So I'm sure that keeps you also pretty busy. When people think about personnel working a homicide case, they might kind of think about TV detectives working the scene of a homicide as seen on many, many TV shows. Can you explain to me what a dedicated homicide prosecutor does and how they work with law enforcement?
Yes. So, for instance, we have a prosecutor who is our, let's say, our Cape Coral liaison. So if a homicide occurs in Cape Coral, I'll use that as an example, although we have them for every agency, that prosecutor gets a call very early on that a homicide has occurred. Sometimes the prosecutor actually goes to the scene just to observe. We have investigators. We have two dedicated investigators in our homicide unit. They sometimes are called out to a scene to observe and possibly help in any way that is needed. The prosecutor can do the same thing and is involved from very early on with this is what's happening. Here's the warrants that we need. Search warrants are a very big part of homicide cases and many criminal cases. So we may assist with drafting them, getting them to the judge that needs to sign them. And then the prosecutor who's on that case would stay involved, possibly even with another prosecutor, in what's needed, what other evidence is needed to get the case into the system. Frequent meetings occur as the case comes towards getting into the system or it comes towards an arrest being made. Sometimes an arrest is made right away. Usually we've talked it over with law enforcement and decided that the evidence is there and that the arrest should be made. Other times we're working on getting more evidence, so we make sure we have a solid case that will make it through a jury verdict, and we work with law enforcement in heading towards that. So that prosecutor may be involved with the case for several months before it gets into the system with law enforcement.
Is there a risk of making an arrest before all of the I's are dotted and T's crossed with evidence?
There's a tremendous risk.
What happens if you do? I mean, do you ever get a do-over? I mean, can you go after it again? I mean, once an arrest is made, can you go back and rearrest based on further evidence?
So once an arrest is made, something called speedy trial is triggered. In Florida, in a felony case, you have 6 months to bring somebody to trial unless they waive that right to have a speedy trial. So if an arrest is made and we cannot file charges because we're waiting on more evidence or we're waiting for DNA analysis and the 6 months runs and speedy trial runs, the case is closed forever, double jeopardy is attached, and that person can never be charged if the evidence comes up later that would have proven that they did it.
So it's critical.
We're very fortunate with our law enforcement that we work hand in hand on when is there enough evidence? Let's not put it into the system and trigger speedy trial until we all feel that there's enough evidence to get it to a jury. Law enforcement's burden is a probable cause. They can arrest if they have probable cause. The state attorney, a prosecutor's burden all over the United States is beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt. So they're very different. So we work together on saying, okay, you may have probable cause. Let's make sure we can prove it before we put it in, because if we can't and speedy trial runs, we have to release that person out of the system forever, which causes the person to feel empowered and is really the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of cases that become high profile cases that get out into the news and people kind of, you know, armchair policing and investigating might look and say, what's taking so long? Why is this taking so long? But what you're explaining makes sense in that you have to get it done and arrested right or else you're going to trigger a problem down the road.
Exactly. And we're extraordinarily careful, as you can imagine, because that is really the worst case scenario where someone is arrested. There's not enough to put the case into the system. A prosecutor has an ethical they have an ethical duty not to put anything in that they do not feel that they can prove. They are absolutely sworn to uphold justice and not to do that. So we really, really ask law enforcement, please don't do that. And because we work so well together, it happens very rarely.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, if in other districts or other units or not, I'm sorry, not units, circuits, if that ever happens, I mean, how that would be so detrimental to a community to not have that type of a partnership. So tell me about the people that make up the homicide unit. You have the prosecutors, but then you also said you have investigators and some clerical support staff.
We do. We have two investigators assigned to our homicide unit. And what we try to do with our investigators is we've been very fortunate in being able to hire people who have retired from law enforcement where they actually did homicide investigations.
What I was going to ask you. I mean, who just walks in as an investigator? I mean, you have to have had some sort of experience.
You do. We try very hard to hire people who've retired. One of our homicide investigators actually retired from FMPD where he did homicide investigations. And he's instrumental to our running of the homicide unit. We have two investigators in our homicide unit. And then we also have, of course, our clerical staff who really is the backbone of the unit. We previously had three. We now are about to add a fourth as we add the two extra attorneys. So we have a fourth clerical staff helping out because they are incredibly busy and they really do keep that unit functioning.
Yeah, and you have to have those search warrants, correct?
They've got to.
We've all watched
produce.
TV.
That's right.
So we know that that's important.
We cannot have typos and cut and pasting on search warrants. So they really are instrumental in making sure that everything runs smoothly in that unit for the attorneys and the investigators.
Southwest Florida is seeing a boost in state prosecutors that are focused on homicides. You can call in with your thoughts or questions at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So when it comes down to the evidence for homicide cases, what elements of a case do prosecutors focus on? Is it more securing the evidence and making sure that's correct, or do they do any interviewing of witnesses?
They do both. So from the very beginning, they'll work with law enforcement on – they're not the ones actually going out and gathering the evidence. They're working with law enforcement to say, here's what we think we need. Can you make sure we fingerprint this? Can you make sure we swab this item for DNA? And we work with law enforcement on that. Then we also, of course, do interview witnesses. It could be that we don't interview every witness going into the arrest phase, depending on how much time there is. But as we determine whether or not we're going to file charges, what charges are we going to file? There's many, many times that we bring witnesses into the office and say, all right, let's go over what you saw so they can determine, judge the credibility of the witness. So there's much of that, which is why some of this is so time-consuming, why we need more people, because the amount of time it goes into correctly prosecuting and getting a case ready for trial, making sure you're putting the right charges in the system, as you can imagine, is greatly time-consuming and worth every minute spent on it to get it right.
How much of an impact does a victim have on the type of sentencing that a prosecutor might go for?
So we always try to take a victim's family's wishes into account. We have a victim's rights statute in Florida. We follow it very strictly, and we believe in it very, very firmly. We try very hard to involve family members in our reasoning and decision making from the beginning. They don't have the absolute end call on it, but we always like them to understand why we're making the decision, hopefully to agree with our decision, and we always seek input from a victim's family in a first degree murder when we are determining at the beginning whether or not to seek the death penalty, and we always seek input from the family of the victim in making our decision. That's one of the factors we take into account.
What would be in a prosecutor's mind the ideal resolution? Is it jail time? Is it maximum sentencing? I mean, do you always kind of want to go all out as much as you can, what the evidence will get you?
Well, in a homicide, are we talking a homicide case?
Yes.
So in a homicide case, normally what the prosecutor will seek in most cases is a lengthy prison term, if not a life sentence, and in fact, in first-degree murders, many times a death sentence. So there is no – I would not say there would be an ideal resolution. We look at every case individually. We look at the facts. We look at the law, and then we determine what is the just and right sentence here. What's the right sentence for the community? What's the right sentence for the victim's family? And that's more so how we determine it. So there may be a case where there's some real mitigating circumstances. We may have a victim's family coming and saying, we don't want you to seek a maximum sentence on this. On the other hand, we may have a case with a victim's family saying, we want a death sentence. So there's always this area where we take many considerations into consideration. However, in a murder case, as you can imagine, it is much more common than not to be seeking a maximum type of sentence, from a 40-year prison sentence to a life sentence to a death sentence.
It's kind of the ultimate crime.
It is.
That's the most serious one, and that is probably why I would imagine it's the most complicated, because you have to be like 1,000% sure in most of these cases.
Yes. We our burden, as I said, is beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt. And unless we feel that we can swear under oath that we think we can prove that, then we do not put it into the system. We have to meet our ethical burden, and we want to make sure that if we charge someone that we are successful in the prosecution, because as I stated, it's one of the worst things that can happen when you have to drop a case after putting it into the system. It does not it actually, you know, it really makes the person who was charged feel like they can get away with it. So we really try hard to avoid that, and we like to put in cases that we can prove, that we feel very strongly that we can prove.
So what is the average turnaround once something gets into the system? How long does it usually take to get to conclusion? I'm sure it varies widely, but is there an average?
It does. So in a homicide case, I would say the average is close to 2 years. There are many things that go into that. There's a case in Collier County, the DeMoss case, that is, I think, on it's getting close to trial, but it's been in the system for many years because of various factors, things that are taken into account when you might look and see why is a homicide case taken so long would be, for instance, somebody being declared incompetent to proceed, being declared, you know, a procedure of whether or not somebody was insane at the time of the trial. And then, of course, just because it's a homicide, and especially if you're seeking the death penalty, the ultimate sanction, the amount of defense work that goes into it while they try to mitigate that and they seek a life sentence is incredibly time consuming, and that just slows the process down as they do that. So the average turns out to be around 2 years usually on a homicide.
But if you have that 6 month turnaround that you have to be ready, do you have to be ready to go as
Yes.
a prosecutor at 6 months, but the defense can drag it out longer?
The prosecutor must be ready to go. We tell our prosecutors, when you put a case in the system, you better be ready to go, because if the defendant does not waive speedy trial, and by the way, in a misdemeanor case, the speedy trial period is 90 days instead of 180. So we tell the prosecutor, you need to be ready to go, and you better be ready to go in that 6 month period, which is why we always ask law enforcement, please, if it's not even ready to go to the lab for all the testing that takes so long, we got to wait so that we can, you know, we can be ready to go in case the speedy trial period is running.
And but so when cases go for a year and a half, 2 years long, that's because of different maneuvers by the defense.
So a defense attorney can choose at one of the first proceedings, which may be a case management conference or a pretrial conference, usually case management on something like that. They can choose to waive speedy trial, which means that the case will not immediately hit the trial path. And oftentimes a defense attorney may choose to do that because in Florida there's a right to take depositions, meaning a sworn statement from every single witness. And a defense attorney may decide, I would like to take a deposition. And they often do. That's oftentimes the way a case proceeds, especially a homicide. Depositions are taken from each witness. So if there are 200 witnesses, then that is very time consuming, as you can imagine. And that's just the amount of time it takes. And when something like that happens, they do waive speedy trial. And oftentimes a defense attorney decides that strategically that's the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a call coming in from Craig. He's in Lee County. Craig's on the line. What would you like to say?
Oh, hi. I had a question and then a comment. The question is, what percentage of the homicides are committed with firearms? And my comment is just that I think that there needs to be much more control of firearms and through the whole country, and that there seems to be such resistance on the government level to controlling firearms, but the American people, it's been shown that even the NRA members want more gun control.
Okay, well, that's a question that I will direct to Amira. So the question was, do you have any idea of rough percentages of what number of homicides or what percent of homicides are committed with firearms?
So I don't have an exact percentage. However, I will tell you that the cases that we see are oftentimes committed with a firearm. Oftentimes we are putting the enhancer onto the charge, which means that we will seek an enhanced sentence under the 10/20 life, which is meaning the use of a firearm, whether you used it, pointed at somebody, actually injured somebody with it. We do seek enhanced sentencing. So we do see many, many of our homicides that do involve firearms. Obviously, the vehicular homicides do not involve firearms, but the other homicides oftentimes involve a firearm. It's much, much more frequently seen than perhaps a homicide where a knife was used or a strangulation or something like that. So it is, I would say the number is probably on the high side for percentage.
Mm-hmm. One of the cases that I believe you worked with was a high-profile murder case of a former sheriff's deputy who shot and killed his estranged wife and her boyfriend, who was another sheriff's deputy. And that what went into that kind of an investigation? I mean, how – when you read that story, and I guess you can tell me about it again because now
Sure.
it's a case, a closed case. But it seems kind of obvious what happened. But how meticulous did you have to be with that type of evidence?
So that case was a Collier County case. I prosecuted it when I was the Collier County head for the state attorney's office. And the case was a double homicide because the an actual deputy from Collier County was killed, and the person who had been a deputy with Collier County killed his estranged wife and this other deputy. So although it seemed on its face that it was an easy to prove case, it actually was – it's very, very difficult because when you charge premeditated murder, first-degree murder, which carries the ultimate sanction of the death penalty, which we sought the death penalty in that case on both deaths, there must be a – you must prove that premeditation occurred. So it's not just, well, I lost my temper in the heat of the moment and committed a murder. That could be more so a second-degree murder. This is a – I thought about it beforehand and I committed the murder. So you have to prove, as you mentioned earlier, the elements of the crime, one of which in a case like that is premeditation. And to prove premeditation, you know, you have to prove through witnesses all the events that went into the ultimate event of the killing. So it requires much more than just, well, the killing occurred. It's what happened before the killing leading up to that. And then, of course, any physical evidence that places the person, if they don't confess, that places the person at the scene. How do we know that person did it? What physical evidence is there? What DNA is there? What ballistic evidence is there? That was a firearm death. What fingerprint evidence is there? All of that went into that case, and we actually worked on that case from the very beginning with the Collier County Sheriff's Office. We moved the venue to Charlotte County. There was so much publicity, and it was back in the days Court TV would broadcast the entire trial, which they did in that case. They broadcast the entire trial on TV.
When was that? Like 2000, I think?
It was 2000, 2001, yes.
So that defendant said he was – I think he claimed that he was defending himself. I think that was how that went. And then
yes.
But you still had to be able to prove that, no, that was not the case.
That's right. You have to counter that argument. And also when you were trying a case like that and you're seeking the death penalty, a great deal of the preparation actually goes into what we call the penalty phase, where the prosecution who is seeking death must prove aggravating factors, which are a whole set of statute – are laid out in the statute, a whole set of factors that must be shown to get the death penalty. And then the defense – works on their mitigating factors, and the prosecutor tries to counter the mitigating factors. So as you're preparing for a trial like that, it's not just the guilt phase you're preparing for. You're also preparing a great deal of preparation time put into the penalty phase.
How did that case end up?
So that case, there was a on both deaths that we sought the death penalty for, there was not a majority vote by the jury for death. So that case ended up with two life sentences.
Okay. So
without the chance of parole.
Okay. And just generally in Southwest Florida, do we see a disproportionate amount of homicides, or are we kind of on par with other circuits in Florida?
I think as far as the other circuits, we're actually, if not even on par, I think we may be a little bit below the average. I'm happy to say, as you said at the beginning, our crime rate in our circuit, the last 5 years, we've had the lowest crime rate in our circuit in the whole state of Florida, and 6 of the last 7 years. So I think the homicides actually fall in line with that. That being said, we want to continue having the lowest crime rate, which is why whenever we can, we restructure, we use our resources and our, you know, your taxpayer money as wisely as we can putting it. That's why we added the people in homicide to say we're going to keep our crime rate low and keep fighting violent crime to keep our community safe.
Mm-hmm. A recent audit by an outside agency of the Fort Myers Police Department found that there are about 100 cold case murders in Fort Myers. And how does your office view something like cold cases that may be months or even years old? Do you ever dive into that?
Oh, yes. We have just very successfully prosecuted several cold cases. We did a no-body case from the city of Fort Myers, from FMPD. We work with them very closely on their cold cases, always offering suggestions. They work very hard to try to solve those. We prosecuted a no-body case for them, and we were successful last year. We've also prosecuted out of Charlotte County in the last year two defendants charged with the death of Tara Sidorovich. And that case was a more than 10-year-old cold case, which our prosecutor worked with the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office for years until we finally felt that we had enough to go to a grand jury. We took it myself and the other prosecutor took it to a grand jury, and he, with a team of prosecutors from our Charlotte office, successfully held two jury trials where both defendants have been convicted of that murder. So, and we have another cold case pending in Charlotte that will go to trial in the next few months. So we really try to work hard with law enforcement no matter how long it takes and sticking with it. And we just showed with several of those cases, if you stick with it, sometimes evidence emerges and you can go forward and have a successful prosecution and give the family some closure.
And tell me, what is a no-body case?
So where the body's never been recovered.
Just how do you do that?
Well, you argue circumstantially that the person has never appeared And you also have to argue circumstantially. You have to do things like where the person's hometown is, have somebody come in from the hometown and say that person's never come back here. You know, just as much as you can think of to prove that that person is dead, because nobody who knew that person has ever seen or heard from him after the date when they were last with the defendant. And then circumstantially what the defendant may have said to people that indicates that they killed the person. But we can't find the body because they're not cooperating with law enforcement and showing where the body is or admitting to doing the killing. So as you can imagine, very difficult legally. You have to have a lot of circumstantial evidence to prosecute a case like that. But it absolutely can be done, and we have done it before recently in the last few years.
So there are about 100 cold cases right now. So do you kind of always have to have your radar out for any kind of tip or any kind of piece of information? Or do you ever look at a current case you're working on and find a piece of evidence in that or a circumstance in a current case and say, well, maybe this could apply to this cold case? Do you have kind of like a mental catalog?
Absolutely. And our prosecutors are all – we do get – quite often, you'd be surprised, tips from somebody. For instance, you have a defendant charged with a burglary. That defendant contacts their lawyer and says, I know something about this homicide that took place. We always look into it. We always sit down and decide whether or not we're going to take what's called a proffer from that person with their attorney to see what they know, see if they have any information that could help law enforcement. And then we decide whether or not we're going to deal with the person depending on their credibility and what we should do with the information. But every single thing like that is followed up on. And that's actually another additional duty of the homicide attorneys, that they are frequently bringing people into the office who say they know something, where they meet with them with law enforcement or issue a subpoena to bring somebody in, because we have the power to do that. We can subpoena people and bring them in and ask them questions with law enforcement. So that's something you'd see them doing on a daily basis, is helping with interviews to determine whether people have information, as they say they do, on homicides.
And another thing that came out from that investigation with the Fort Myers Police Department was cooperation with witnesses and family members. How much does that come into play with the prosecutor's office?
Tremendously. We work really hard to develop a trust level with the community where they feel that they can come in and trust us and to get their case or the case where they're a witness through the system. It's a very difficult thing. Without eyewitnesses, if that's the – sometimes the only way to prove a case is with eyewitnesses. If there's no ballistic evidence or there's no forensic evidence, no DNA, for instance, sometimes a drive-by shooting – would be a good example where some witnesses saw it happen and there's no other way to prove who the people in the car were that did the shooting. Sometimes we have to rely on eyewitnesses, and when the eyewitnesses don't want to come forward, we don't have a case. So we rely heavily on them, and we try very hard from the time we realize we have a witness like that to build up a relationship with that witness where they hopefully trust us enough, and one of the concerns they have is feeling safe enough to get through the system.
And that had been an issue for a while, and they're attempting to turn that around with the
Yes.
police department. Are you seeing it getting a little bit better?
Absolutely. I think the Fort Myers Police Department has tried very, very hard to develop a new relationship with the community, to get out there in the community and develop some bonding and some trust. And actually, one of the reasons we added an additional prosecutor is we very much want our prosecutor to work hand in hand with FMPD and get out into the community with FMPD as much as possible, so that that person knows the witnesses as they come in and has developed some sort of relationship. It also helps we have an investigator who worked for FMPD for years and knows many of the people in the community. That's been a great help in reaching out to people and hoping that they will continue to be cooperative as witnesses.
What do you think is one of the things – we're about to wrap – oh, I think we have a phone call. We got Lewis from South Fort Myers. Lewis is on the phone and has a question for us. What would you like to ask, Lewis?
Well, I was particularly struck by the comment on the amount of investigation and the amount of time necessary to proceed on a homicide. And in relationship to the number of homicides, particularly unsolved murders in Fort Myers, and the Freed Report, and that there was some liability because the proper investigation and the proper attention to what should have been done was not done. And I don't think that is a matter of totally communicated to everyone. That has been totally communicated. And I think that is a significant point.
I'm not sure that I completely follow what you are saying there. Could you rephrase that for me? Because I don't think I really understood what you're trying to mention.
Well, what I'm mentioning is there are more than 35 unsolved homicides, most of them gun-related. And because there were deficiencies in the city in going about the investigation and proceeding with charges were never made, this has gone unresolved and is still being worked on. But after this length of time, it may not particularly happen.
Okay. Well, so, Amira, do you feel that maybe the addition of more prosecutors to the homicide unit will be able to help wade through some of these cold cases that he's referring to?
I do. You know, we meet frequently with FMPD and sit down and we discuss. We actually have a cold case meeting where we sit down and discuss every single cold case that's pending, any new developments. We've assigned more than one prosecutor to those cases, so we're working very hard at addressing any concerns there are in the free report. And I understand what the caller's saying. I think FMPD has been working with the new chief very hard at addressing the concerns. And we've had numerous meetings with not only the chief, but with his new command staff and people who are working on those cases. So we, as you know, there's always room for improvement in every agency. We strive really hard to overcome what that report mentioned and work with law enforcement. That's one of the reasons we've enhanced our unit to make sure that law enforcement always has, as part of their team, the state attorney's office to help them in any way they need.
And the support that they need to get through that. Well, we are going to have to leave it there for now. I think we've run up against time, but I will really want to say thanks to our guest, Chief Assistant State Attorney Amira Fox. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Coming up, OneTree.org is beginning the pushback against deforestation right here in Lee County, where they've been busily planting one tree at a time. We'll talk with the co-founders of this uniquely earnest new organization when we come back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.